Now, what's amazing about these kind of how these stories sort of come together years later, I didn't find out until 10 years later that was an old Hank Snow tune. I was amazed when this guy laid this thing out. And, this guy laid that out. I just, I was blown away. And, So we were driving along for a ways there, and this guy played a few more tunes, and he says, now you said you're heading to L.A. You wanna drive on through, right through the night? We can drive right through, and I'll help you drive. I got a license, and I'll show it to you. He says to the driver, and he says, we'll drive right on through. We'll be there by tomorrow morning if you want. And the guy says, no, I'm gonna stay at a motel. I've already planned to stay in Flagstaff. I'm gonna stay at a motel. No, I don't drive more than 8 hours. No, I can't do that. And he says, no, I'll help you drive. We could be there. He said, no, can't do that. He says, well, in that case, I'm afraid to go get dropped off in Arizona. He says, I'll get busted sure as the world. They're really hard on hitchhikers in Arizona. He says, so if you don't mind, we'll be coming into Gallup, New Mexico pretty soon. And if you'll just drop me off right there at the Gallup, that's on the border of New Mexico and Arizona. He says, there's a freight yard there, and I'll just catch a freight. And I think,
catch a freight? Oh, boy!
And so I said, holding back as much as I could, would it be any harder for two to catch a freight than it would for one? He said, oh, no. He said, did you ever catch a freight? I said, no. I said, will you show me what it? Yeah, there's nothing to it. He says, so we just wait and the train was going slow. You just throw your pack on, and then you climb on. If you don't get on that same car, you get on the next car. It'll stop later, and you'll be able to get it. And, okay, well, all right. And it sounds like that's all you have to do. Yeah, just throw it on there. Just hop on. Don't fall under the wheels there. all right, okay. Well, it turned out just right then we started coming right into the outskirts of Gallup. And as it turned out, the train tracks led right along beside the road. And there was a train just going along. Clack, clack, clack. He says, that's our train, you know. He says, cut your stuff together. Well, I had slept in the guy's car the night before, and I had my stuff just scattered out all over. He says, get your stuff together, come on. So we're stuffing the stuff in my pack as quick as I could, you know. And he says, boy, I see you're not a traveling man. A traveling man has his stuff ready to go at a moment's notice. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm just so I'm stuffing that stuff in there and trying to get the top of it tied on there. And the train's leaving. He says, come on, the train, it's going, you know, it's not going to be on. So I grabbed my stuff as quick as I could and just stuffed whatever I had in the top of there. Thanks a lot for the ride, buddy. And you know, and off we went. And it was a big drainage ditch that they had paved over down, and we had to go down the drainage ditch and up the other side, and then up onto the train tracks. Well, I ran down the other side and started coming up the other side, and just got ready to throw my pack on there. And right then I had my camera wrapped up in a big ball of styrofoam, and it rolls right out the top of there, and it rolls right back down the drainage ditch. So I run back down the drainage ditch, grab my camera, stuff it in the pack again, and then throw it on the train and hop on. Now what they had was the piggyback system where they had the semi-trailers on top of flat cars. And so I threw it on there, and I climbed onto this freight car, and here I was under the semi-trailer, and feeling very exposed. And I didn't, where was Ben, you know? He was gone. I didn't see him anywhere. And there I was, you know, riding through the suburbs in the edge of California. So I pulled down underneath those wheels as quick as I could, and kind of pulled back there and kind of pulled my pack in there just to sort of try to be some kind of shelter. And that train just kept going torturously slow through the edge of the town, you know, clack, clack. Clack, 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 clack. And it's just, you know, and I'm just down here just cowering away, just thinking, my heart's, you know, pounding away. And then, where was Ben? Oh, no, what am I into now? And I just kept hanging on, and I hung on, and we're going through, and it kind of went through the edge of town, got to the other side of town, then stops. And there was all these Navajo Indian railroad workers all hanging around out there working, shoveling stuff under there. And I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, what's going on? I'm just there, just cowering under the edge of that, you know, under these wheels. But, you know, just real obvious, just right there. And there was one guy working at the other end of the car, just right there. And I thought, oh, Jesus. And I just kept cowering away. And all of a sudden, he looks over and he sees me and he jumps. And I go. And he looks, he just chuckles, you know, he smiles, he goes. He didn't care about us on that train, you know. And then a few minutes later, the train was stopped there. And a few minutes later, I look on the other side of the train. And there's Ben with his elbows up on the thing. Ah, so you made it. Well, he says, come on, we got it. There's a flat car up here that has a windbreak on it. It'll be more comfortable. We can see the scenery better then. So we climbed up on that freight car and on that flat car and just laid set back up there with the with the big windbreak on there, and we just sailed off across that desert and just took off. And that train just took off. We went through the painted desert. We saw, you know, Navajo Indian women with their sheep, you know, all herding them all out through the cactus. And we started to go up over the edge of the mountains, and we eventually, at dusk, we went up over the Continental Divide, and Ben was just spinning these tales. He was saying, yeah, he says, hitchhiking, he says, it's easy on the body, but it's hard on the mind. He says, now, riding a train, he says, it's hard on the body, but it's easy on the mind. He says, you know, no one to bother you. You don't have to keep answering those questions. Where have you been? What are you doing? You know? He said, it's just easy. He said, now, sometimes, you know, being on the road like this, sometimes, you know, you kind of wish you'd be kind of cold. You wish you'd be home eating pork and beans and sitting around a warm fire, he said, but, you know, it's sure not worth working for. Can you imagine holding down a job for that? He said, you know, the people, the way they are these days, they're so connected to that media. They just need to depend on the media for everything. He says, you know what happened? If they announce the end of the world, you know what everyone would do? They'd all go home and watch it on TV. He says, not me, boy. I'm going to be out in it. I mean, I learned a lot from that fella, you know. And we rode, he said, I couldn't be happier. You know, this was like state of the art. You know, the sun was setting over the Continental Divide. We were going up through the Ponderosa Pines. And soon that night late, we dropped down into the Mojave Desert. We rode all that night through the Mojave Desert. And, oh, was it cold. You know, deserts cool off, and this was a freak cool spell. The train had stopped, we eventually moved into a gondola car. A gondola car is one of those ones that have a side up about this high. And we got into there, and we hunkered down in there, but still, you know, with a 70-mile-an-hour wind chill factor, oh, man, we had on every piece of clothes and every bit of sleeping bag we're in, and it was just so cold. It was just unbelievably cold. And finally, towards dawn that next morning, the train was stops. Occasionally, the trains will pull off, and they will they'll come to a little sidetrack, and they'll wait for an express train to come through. And it pulled off, on a curved sidetrack, and they stopped for a little while. And Ben says, boy, am I cold. Let's go ride up one of the engines. Ride the engine? What are you talking about? Yeah, he says, the engineers, they'll get us, you know. You know, he says, no, we're on a curve here. He says, besides, there's four engines pulling this train. He says, and the engineers only ride in the first one. He said, so all we have to do is we just walk in. We walked not, you know, on the outside of the curve so that the train was pearl was curved around. And the engineers could look back on the curve side, but they couldn't look around the outside edge. So we just hunkered real close to the edge, walked around, and got in the fourth engine. And it was four engines, just like he said. And we climbed up in there. And, oh, warmth. They had a heater in there. And there was a windshield, you know. And we sat in there, and, you know, the engineers came. And after a while, I started to calm down a little bit. And we just kind of looked around. Ben had his feet propped up, you know. And I said, hey, this is pretty classy. This is pretty nice, Ben. He says, you think this is classy? He said, you should have been with me last time I came across the Mojave Desert. He said, it was as hot then, it was in the summer, it was as hot then as it was cold last night. He said, well, it just so happened that the train that I was on was pulling a couple of cars that were hauling automobiles. And they happened to be hauling a big load of Cadillacs. So when the train stopped, I slipped up into one of those Cadillacs on the top. Well, I found out that they keep the keys in under the hood. And I reached in and got the keys. Now, each one of those cars, they unlocked it and sat inside. Now, each one of those cars, they put 1 or 2 gallons of gasoline in just to get them up onto the car, onto the freight car, and then back down to the showroom. So, he says, I just turned on the engine, turned on the air conditioner. Turned on the AM/FM radio. Sat back, propped my feet up on the dashboard, had my little canteen of water. I'd sip on water occasionally there and just watch the desert go by. Whenever that car ran out of gas, I just moved to the next one. What a concept, huh? What a concept. I mean, should we ever have such first class as that, huh? Well, we drove. We eventually came into the LA freight yards, and we quickly hopped out of the freight cars, and we sort of hopped back in our gondola car where we left our packs, And we're sitting in there, and we decided we'd just go to, so it was warm, sun was shining in, we were in the edge of the LA, and Ben was going to go on his way. And he said, he asked around, he found, we eventually found a train for me to follow that was going north. I was going to go to visit some friends in San Francisco. And so what he did was he said, we had a little breakfast there, you know. I had a little bit of dried fish and some cheese. I think he had some bread. We had a little breakfast there, and I had noticed while we were sitting there in the sun, it was so nice to be in the warmth and have the train be quiet for a little while, and we were just kind of bidding adieu, and I noticed that he had, like, on his blue jean jacket, and underneath his blue jean jacket, he had it open a little bit. I noticed he had a vest on, and this vest had all these little buttons and medallions on it, and I looked at it, and I said, Ben, what are these? What are all those things? He says, well, that's just stuff people laid on me here and there. I said, well, let me see. He said, well, tell me about him. And he opened up his vest. He says, yeah, this was my brother's good conduct medal when he was in the Army. And this is a knob off of a chest of drawers. It's this chick I know over in San Francisco. And this is a pin a friend had he laid on me in Fort Worth, Texas. This one, Boise, Idaho. And, yeah, this one, Memphis, Tennessee. And Baltimore, Maryland. And Seattle, Washington.
And he went down these whole things, and each one of them had sort of a story and a memory for him, and this was like his memorabilia.
And then I got to thinking, on that collar of my jacket, I said, oh, that pin, you know, that Dartmouth Outing Club pin? I said, well, I bet you'd love something like this, wouldn't you? He says, I've been eyeing that all morning. So I undid it, and I gave it to him, and he sent me on a train. He asked around in the freight yard there and found some freight fellow that told him which train would be going north. And he sent me up on a train going north. And that's the last I ever saw of him. Well, so that all that next day, I was trying to get to San Francisco. So I rode up through the San Jacinto Valley, up through all the incredible agricultural country, and later on that afternoon, the train came in and stopped. Now, trains stop a lot of times, you know, you don't know why, especially if you don't want to ask, you know. And they stopped at various places. And it stopped at the edge of this little town outside of Stockton, California. And it was an old freight yard, not used a whole lot. You can see that it had been around for a long time. There was like an old water tank up there that used to be left over from the steam days, you know.
Did not have a nickel, not a penny could I show. Get off, get out, you railroad bum. And he slammed the boxcar door. Yodelay-o, lay-o, lay. Well, they put me off in Texas, a state I dearly love. The wide open space all around me, boy, the moon and the stars up above. Nobody seems to want me or to lend me a helping hand. I'm on my way from Frisco Bay, going back to Dixieland. My pocketbook is empty, my whole heart is full of pain. I'm 1,000 miles away from home, just waiting for a train. Yodelay-o, lay-o, yodelay. Yodelay-o,
Of a story. You know how the first yodel got started? Well, a long time ago. In the Swiss Alps, there was an old Swiss farmer. He lived there with his small family, and one day, knocking on the door comes a traveling salesman. And the traveling salesman says, "Have you got a place to stay?" And the old Swiss farmer says, "Well, I might have a place to stay. I have a little room right next to the room with my beautiful 18-year-old daughter." But he says, "I can't have any monkey business with my beautiful 18-year-old daughter." And now this family, no problem. And so just that night, after they all settled in bed, the old farmer sprinkled flour all around the hallway, all around the doorways, because he knew he'd see the footprints if there was any monkey business. Well, early that next morning, he gets up and he sees more tracks all over that floor than he's ever seen before. And so he knows there's been monkey business. So he opens that door right away, right into that traveling salesman's room, and the traveling salesman turned out the window was open. He'd already gone. And he looks out there, and in that morning mist, he sees that traveling salesman. He'd already gone down one valley, and he was coming up the other side of that beautiful, beautiful Swiss Alp. And he says, "How dare you all have monkey business with my daughter? How dare you? How dare you?" And the traveling salesman says, "You're a lady too." And that's how the first yodel started. That's true. You can let me get away with that one. Well, let's see. I think what I should do is just tell you one other little short episode in that same adventure that was somewhat of the apex of my trip when I was looking for America, you know? Well, in the course of looking for America, I ended up going up into Canada. And I went up into British Columbia. And I had a name and an address of a friend of a friend who was homesteading back at some little cabin way in the backwoods. And so I went, and of course hitchhiking up there, it was a matter of just kind of walking along this road till, you know, maybe once or twice a day a pickup truck would come by, and they'd usually pick you up because, you know, there's the only person they'd seen in a long time. Somehow or another, I got to this guy's house and he wasn't there, you know. So I stayed at his house one time, left him a nice little note, and then went on back down. I was starting back down the road, and another pickup truck comes by with this young couple in it. And they had a whole bunch of junk in the back of it, and they had a little cab on the back of it. And they said, "Oh yeah, we know him. Yeah, he's working down in so-and-so." And they said, "Well, we're gonna go camp out. We're waiting to get into a cabin. We can get in a cabin in a couple of weeks. We're gonna go camp out on this real pretty river where we can pull our truck down to, and we got lots of food, and, you know, if you want to come with us, come on." You know, in those days after the 60s, you know, everybody, comrades, you know, "Sure, come with us." So I thought, well, gee, that'd be great. So I'm here, I was in British Columbia in these Rocky Mountains, the Canadian Rockies. I wanted to spend a little time there. So we stayed along that river, and we camped there, and it was a kind of a quiet time. One thing that was interesting is that this couple were incredibly nonverbal. They just didn't talk much. It was interesting because it sure wound me right down, you know. I mean, I found out that they were pregnant, that she was gonna have a baby, you know. And I said, "Gee, that must be really run through a lot of changes trying to think about how you're gonna adapt to a new baby." And she said, "Yeah." That was it. So we listened to the river a lot. Quieted me right down. They wouldn't talk. They were nice, you know, fed me, and we had a nice time, but they just didn't talk much. And I thought, well, gee whiz, here I am listen to the river, and she ought to just sometime go climb up one of these rocky mountains. These beautiful snow-capped mountains on either side. We're in the middle of this, you know, incredibly rugged valley with cedar trees along the river and spruce and fir going up the sides. And I thought, my goodness, I ought to climb up one of these mountains. So I set off one day with my little day pack in there, and decided I'd see how far I could go. And I started up that mountain, and I climbed up and climbed and climbed and climbed. It wasn't any trail up through there. I just was kind of bushwhacking, and just knowing if I came down, I'd hit the river and I wouldn't get lost, you know. And so I climbed up and climbed and climbed, and I realized I wanted to get to any of these snow fields that we could just barely see up in there. But I got up to this big rocky ridge with kind of a big open outcropping. And I could get up there, and from there I could just see, you know, for miles and miles, see the next valley, and it was just a, you know, just a real kind of breathtaking view. And I had my sketch pad with me, and so I took out my pen, and I just made some sketches of the scenery around, and just was looking at it, and just, you know, just taken by the beauty. And I'd been kind of quiet, so my mind was in a good quiet state, and then I drew a couple pictures of that, and then I decided, well, I'll just head on down the hill, and I head down, and when I dropped down into those spruce and fir trees. All of a sudden, I'd just gotten into them, and this big bird flies up and lands in a tree, just you know, like 5-6 feet away or 10 feet away, you know, and just sits there looking at me. It was a big bird, like a grouse, but it wasn't like any grouse I'd ever seen in the East. It had little red spots here and kind of a blue-green kind of a color, and it just sat there, and it looked at me on this branch. It stood there on this branch, so close, and going, whoop, whoop. I looked at it, back at it, you know, and this beast is going to sit there. I'll get out my little sketchbook, and I'll see if I can draw some pictures of it. So I got out my sketchbook, just real, sat down, got out my sketchbook, and I drew this little picture. And that bird just kept looking at me, going, whoop, whoop. And they turned around on the branch. I got a new pose. Great. You know, I found out later that this bird was called a spruce grouse, and spruce grouse are birds of the far north and of pretty much desolate areas, because they're also known by the early white people that came through. They called them fool hens, and because they're so tame. And now I've also heard recently that they eat nothing but the tips of spruce, and it makes them so weird tasting that most animals won't prey on them, and so they can afford to be tame. And so this tame bird, and I kind of drew it, and then the bird flew off after a little bit, and I kind of got sort of along in that time. I got this incredible feeling that, oh my God, here I am in the Canadian Rockies. I'm drawing pictures of wildlife. That must mean I'm a wildlife artist. Holy cow. I'm a wildlife artist in the Canadian Rockies, drawing pictures of exotic northern birds. And I think, now hold it. If someone had told me 2 years ago, you know, when I was failing out of college because I was trying to take biology, that I was going to be a wildlife artist in the Canadian Rockies, that would seem like, to me, the most incredible dream that had ever come true. The most incredible, fulfillment of like a lifetime dream. I think, now, how did I get here? Did National Geographic hire me? No, let's see, did I have a big research grant? No, I had to get, I hitchhiked here, and I just went there, and I started to do it. And sort of, in some ways, that little experience shaped my life, realizing that if you want to do something, you don't go try to get National Geographic, you just go and you do it, and then worry about the implications later. And then just about 2 years ago, someone says to me, "Hey, have you ever seen a spruce grouse before?" And I go, "Yeah, matter of fact, I have." I said, "How come you asked?" He said, "Well, I found out that the Indians, the northern Indians, consider them to be a very special messenger bird. And when one appears, you should listen because it brings you a special message." And I go, Monkeys can have visions too, you know. So just get out there and do it, gang. Don't worry about who's hiring you. And that's really all I have to say tonight. And I sure appreciate it talking to you. Anyone else got some tails on this?